Good evening, guys. We'll just let it catch up a minute. Just let the lag set in, as it usually does. Where are we? I'll just give it a couple of minutes for people to start coming in, as usual. Here we go. I'll pin this to the top. I'll share that to my page. Good evening, guys. Welcome to Live and Undrugged Series 2, Episode 9. Tonight, I'm speaking to Malcolm Wellington. Now, Malcolm is a British man living in Canada. However, we're doing this podcast all the way from sunny Mexico, so you'll have to just bear with us in case there's any lag or interruption in the broadcast. We will do our best to bring you back. Malcolm, thanks for coming on. It's been a long time coming. I just want to take you back to the start of your journey, really, and let us know who you are and sort of what you're about.
Okay, Jack, thanks for having me on here. And I guess this probably started in the first maybe 5 years, up to 5 years of age, when in my upbringing, I realized two things very early on. I'm not good enough. I'm on my own here. No one's there to support me. I didn't get any sense that I felt safety, felt loved, felt any connection, just felt on my own, and there was a lot of chaos around me. So I think that is I internalized, I didn't know what I was doing because I'm a little kid, but I internalized a belief about myself and about the world out there. You know, the world out there maybe was scary, and I'm a scary place. I'm on my own. Shit happens and I've got no control of it. I'm pretty much on my own and there's something wrong with me. So that belief probably developed a bit later, but it emanated from that home life. So that is right at the beginning to set the scene.
Right. Okay. So I can relate to sort of that feeling alone and not feeling part of something. Having the family there, but not feeling part of it. You know, that was a big part of my journey. I externalized it in different ways, in behavior in my own sort of journey. So where did you go from there?
So as I went through my childhood years, things didn't particularly get any better. And into my teenage years, of course, that was problematic. I was an only child, by the way. I had an authoritarian father who, it's do as I say. But I was quite a rebellious child. And if I thought I could get away with something, I did that. I was quite crafty. Sometimes I got caught. My mother was she was more protective or worried about everything I did, overprotective. So I grew up with that. And of course, when I reached teenage years, I'm more of a rebel then, It's like my father's trying to control me and it's like, F you. And I literally did what I wanted then. Because when I was a child, he could use physical punishment or fear of that. But when I'm a teenager, I'm like, you can't touch me now. So it went from there. So that's what happened. The one thing I do want to bring in, Jack, is the power of belief and mindset. And what I believed about myself and the world, that I'm not good enough and, all that stuff. I didn't know any of this at the time, but I created what I believed in my life, situations and circumstances that confirmed, yes, Malcolm, you are not good enough.
I can relate to that one as well. You know, the circumstances that we live in and how we put ourselves out there, we create the mess, and then we just keep going on. You know, and it's not that we actually visualize it or that I actually visualized it. I don't think I had any control of it. My behavior was such a thing where I couldn't control myself. I had no control of myself. But, you know, this is from 8 years old. So, you know, it just got worse and worse for me, externalized in crime and addiction and stuff like that. So how did this externalize for you? Was this down a criminal route or an addictive route? Or
It was, ironically, and I'm not sure why, people can take different routes, whether that's criminality, addiction, whatever, but mine wasn't particularly either of those. I was angry. And I didn't know who at, but it's probably at me and maybe my father. But the only thing that I dabbled in drugs, but I didn't become addicted. As a kid though, I used to thieve, you know, chocolate bars and stuff from the store. I actually got caught for that because my friend had the police around his house, and he told his mother and father, and then they came around my house, and I got in big trouble for that. And but the one thing, I don't know whether this made any difference to me. I think it might have done. But I came back from club. So we're going back to the 60s, and I was out all night in the clubs, and I dabbled in these bombers, you know, blue bombers, and they were stimulant, right? And with a bit of drink, I came home in the morning at 8 a.m. and my mother confronted me. She saw my glassy eyes, and she broke down because I denied it. I haven't taken drugs. She kept on and on and on. And when I said, okay then, yes, I did, but it's all under control, no big deal. And I was shocked when suddenly, I've never seen my mother do this. She was crying, she broke down in tears and she was sobbing. And thinking back over that, that was the first time I felt in a ironic way, maybe she does care about me. I'm 17, 18, whatever. And after that, I still dabbled a bit, but I didn't get into it in a big way by any means.
Mm.
So my mess at that time, I wasn't in a big mess at that time. Situations evolved down the road. That kind of was messy, I suppose. Like the next stage, I didn't choose to get married and have two kids by 26. 26, I was married, two kids. The first one was an unplanned pregnancy, and that led to a situation that put me in deep doo-doo, right? So I'll leave it there because I'm not, I don't want to share too much right now. I want to know what's going to help serve your audience. What solutions, again, if I'm sharing this kind of backdrop and how it evolved, because things didn't begin to change until, we're talking maybe 20, 25 years later.
Mm.
In some ways, my... sorry, Jack, in some ways my stories I'm thinking about this is, it's kind of average, but it's more interesting in the way that the transformation occurred and the journey that I'm on now. And we're all on a journey. We're never gonna learn enough or end the journey. And right now my journey is exciting. But anyway, I want to use it in context. So you bring out for me what you need me to share that's gonna help serve people.
So tell me about the metamorphosis, tell me about the transition and how that came about.
Okay, yeah. Now that was a big deal. So this happened around 1990. I'd been married 20 years, had two kids, had a job. I was functioning, but things weren't great with the relationship with the wife, and the kids were acting out and all that. And I didn't know Jack. I didn't know me. I never knew how to be a father, and I never knew how to be a husband. None of that stuff. So my marriage wasn't great. We've been together 20 years. The relationship with my kids wasn't great. Relationship with myself, that wasn't great either. And then, long story short, I find out my wife was having an affair, and that led to me the marriage ending. That was the first thing. And then I was a mess. So I'm in my early to mid-40s, and I'm acting like a crazy teenager, going out the weekend, partying, drinking, chasing after women, doing all sorts of stuff like that. Maybe, and I'm not proud to say this, driving back from the club or whatever, knowing that I'm probably over the limit, right? I'm not paralytic drunk, but I'm over the limit. So that went on for a couple of years, and I had one of my sons still living at home, the other was away. And on my behavior, so I'd come back and I would be drunk, and a couple of situations happened where I'm not being the father, the good role model. So I just made the intention that I need to get my, excuse my language, I need to get my shit together and turn this around. And that's 2 years into it. And I began slowly, bit by bit, to get more of a handle and control, you know, some of the, you know, the partying at weekends and whatever. And I was probably drinking every night as well. That's the other thing. I was still drowning my sorrows from the end of the marriage. And then I was going to clubs and I was noticing, oh, I can't hear very well. It's noisy. I could be for go to the doctors thinking I'll need my ears syringed out, something minor. Anyway, a year later, after test, they diagnosed me with a huge brain tumor on my brain stem that's life-threatening. And then the only option is you have it out. So then the nightmare really began. So I don't know how much story I will need to go into, but suffice it to say that a year later, I had to wait for the surgery. It wasn't urgent because the type of tumor was a slow growing one, and it wasn't urgent. And of course, with the National Health Service, you know, the pressure, and even at that time on beds. So anyway, I ended up having not one, but two operations just to remove the tumor. The first one was 13 hours, the second was 11 hours. So 24 hours to remove a tumor. They were done in two separate hits, right? And both those were, so it was literally that, the whole experience was a nightmare. First time, the first operation, I couldn't walk and it was really difficult, but within 6 weeks, I'm back at work. I wasn't back at work, but I was okay. I was walking again. After the second one, that was in October, the first one. Second one ended up in February. And after that, I had no movement that you can still see. I have the battle scar. My facial palsy is, it won't get better than this. It's so much better than it was. But I was literally after the second operation, and I'm whatever, 45 years of age. I'm literally at my worst, like a baby. Couldn't feed myself, couldn't walk, couldn't do anything. Couldn't even turn over in bed, move my head more than 6 inches at my worst. So I was literally had to learn to get my life back. That was my intention. I need to get my life back. And that began the transformation.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme. That must have been really, really sort of difficult for you to deal with mentally. I'm glad you fought through it, and you know, I'm glad that you're here to be able to talk about it and to inspire others. So how did you start moving forward in your recovery from being in from being in a bed pretty much paralyzed?
So like they say, the journey begins with a single step. So I had a lot of physiotherapy helped me to walk. So eventually I get on the walker and then the cane and all that. So it's a long, long process. It was a long struggle. Bear in mind, I had no support around me, like a wife, because she gave me a little bit of support, but there wasn't much. So I'm pretty much on my own. The mindset I had was, not that I'm a victim, so I've never adopted I'm a victim mentality. It's always, what can I do to get out of this shit I'm in? So it was like, I want my life back. That was the thing I wanted. I want my life back. So the first thing I did, and when I was able to get my, because I wasn't allowed to drive, so it was to get myself from my home to the bus stop, take the bus to the local Tesco and buy my own groceries. And I came back and it wasn't much, I was out maybe an hour, but I was exhausted. But, you know, we know that that's no big deal for guys, but I was so happy that I did that rather than someone bringing me stuff or relying on other people. I actually did that. And that was the first step. And then I took another step. So just like learning to walk, Jack, I put one foot in for one step and then another and then another. And I'm mentally checking it off. Wow, I've done that now. And then I get to the stage, I'm going back to the gym. And then I'm going back to work part-time. Didn't want to go back to work, but I'm going back to work part-time. Then it was full-time. And then after 18 months, I started to get my life back. And, you know, what it was in the end, probably 95% of what I had before, which was pretty damn good, because I had people say to me, you've done so well. People were, you know, what you went through and the size of the tumor and how you came back from it, people can do that, but you've done remarkably well. And I knew even then it was because of my attitude.
The way that we think and the way that we feel manifests itself in the way that we are. So, you know, if you're feeling negative, you're putting out those negative vibes, you're going to have a negative time. And if you're feeling positive, you're going to put out a more positive time. You know, I've not had a brain tumor, but you know, I spent nearly 2 months in hospital. I had to pretty much learn to walk again. I had to learn to eat again. I was emaciated at 6 stone 6 ounces.
Wow.
So, you know, and I'd had lung failure, so I can relate to the fact that going from one mentality to another, I did have the victim mentality, you know, but that's what trauma does to most people. And I had a great trauma in there. But once I decided, and once, you know, I knew that I was going to get out of bed and do something simple like just go to the toilet on my own, or, you know, drink or eat or walk a few steps, then you get into the survival mode, and then pushing on from there. You know, we're not supposed to be in that mode either. That is the fighting mode. We're supposed to be in the thriver mode, which is, I guess, we're kind of in now. Yeah. And as we're teaching and speaking and educating on lifestyles. So going from a brain tumor and going from being stuck in a position where you can't do anything from yourself, and then pushing yourself into, it's kind of the polar extreme, pushing yourself back into life, you know, putting yourself back into the matrix, as it were. Did that affect the people around you? How did that affect the people around you, and how did the relationships then start to work or not work, as it may be?
The people around me, so I came from a very small family. So all my family was at that time was my two sons and my mother and father. And I think that it didn't visibly, and from what they said, it didn't affect them. But of course it did. But, you know, it's that British keep everything to yourself and private. And they didn't, you know, they didn't share anything. So I still felt it's about me in some ways, and my life, and things went on from there. So it wasn't so much the people around me that influenced me. It's still, what do I do? So it was, so I get back to work. So this is in maybe 97, 96. And I've been, so this is how the, you know, all this stuff that I'm going to say now was something that wasn't in my awareness, I would regard as woo-woo, and not on my radar screen at all. So the first thing that happened was, and I believe now there are no accidents, right? So I'm at home, when I'm at home recuperating, I'm watching daytime telly, and I'm watching the Oprah Winfrey Show, and they had a guy on there who was a counsellor, and he was doing his stuff. And I thought, wow, I'd like to do that. So I end up going to a community college and doing part-time counselling course because I want to be a counsellor. I was doing that in the evenings after work. And bear in mind, this is only two years or so after I'm lying in bed, you know, not able to walk and all that, blah, blah, blah. So then I realised this is for me. And my job that I got back to had changed, and it felt, Jack, just like being in prison. Really, I've never been in prison, but I could, you know, it was like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to go there. I just want to escape. So I had that mindset, I need to escape. So I plotted my own little escape from my jail cell, which was the work I was doing. And because I wanted to go and study counseling psychology full time. So I quit my job and went back to college and learned counseling psychology, wanted to be a psychologist counselor. Then I found out it's very difficult. I grew up in London, but East London. And we moved when we got married to Bournemouth, Poole, on the south coast, and it would be very difficult to work there. So it would mean going back to London or setting my sights in Europe or somewhere else. Didn't want to go back to London. So anyway, a chance meeting on a trip to Toronto, Canada, led me on the journey. Oh my God, my dad's Canadian, was born in Canada, applied for citizenship, actually got it. And I moved to Canada to live in July 2000. So within just over 5 years from being in hospital, I'm now on my own in Canada.
So how
for me?
So yeah, how different was like life in Canada to Britain? Was it
okay,
a bit of a culture shock?
Okay, first, so the surprise/shock was not about Canada, because it's not particularly a different culture. Like Mexico now where I am, that's a different culture. But what was the real driving force of the transformation, Jack, was what I learned about me when I was studying psychology. So it was, oh my goodness, now I can understand why my father's like that, why I was like that. It gave me a sense of, I understand myself more and where I'm coming from. So it was like the light being switched on internally. And that was, I just, even in Canada, so for the first 15, 18 years, I read book after book on personal development, self-growth, you know, all that stuff. And I was learning so much. And then it came to a point in 2019 that I went to, I started investing in myself in terms of time and money. Because it's something I'd never done. I didn't have a lot of money, but to focus on me, to give myself things, whether it's buy myself something, it was like, feeling guilty that I'm treating myself. I'd treat myself worse than I treated anybody else because of that sense that I'm still not quite good enough. I still had that in the program, from childhood. It was changing, but it was quite slow. And then I started doing programs like personal learn more about mindset. It was Bob Proctor, Tony Robbins, all the guys who did this work. And I actually went to a seminar in Long Beach, California, by this guy, and I signed up for his year-long program to make impact in the world, you know. So it was like whatever, like at the time I wanted to write a book about my journey, and now it's something completely different, but that was 3 years ago. And then I did other programs, and now fast forward, I'm a life coach, right? I wanted to be a counselor. I wanted to write a book. Now I'm a life coach. How did that happen? It evolved.
Yeah, we constantly evolve. We constantly move. The more that we learn, the better we become, the better equipped we become to handle society, or for me at least. So tell me a bit about changing mindset.
So, yeah, that's very, very fundamental to me, because I had that mindset, one that I'm not good enough. And also, what does it take? What is a man? Who is a man? Now, the belief about who a man should be from society, the media, you like sports. You like women, and you drink beer. you know, those things. And to be vulnerable as a man, that's a sign of weakness. So I hid myself behind a mask of trying to be like the good boy, and all this, you know, I should be strong, keep all my shit together, never, you know, be vulnerable, ask for other people for help, because then you're needy and that's weak. So I'm behind a mask, and it's ironic with masks with corona. People have been wearing masks for ages, right? Long before corona, that internal mindset and belief. But my belief about myself, slowly but surely, because I had accomplished a lot and I'd done that on my own. I'd got myself well again. I'd moved to Canada on my own. I've got a life for myself there on my own. So it kind of was percolating, I guess, in the background that, whoa, you know, I've achieved that now, because I got married young. I always relied on my parents up until I got married, then I'm in the marriage. But now I'm completely on my own and I'm actually doing stuff. So a little bit by bit, I'm building brick by brick, a little bit more confidence. And also by what I'm learning about what we believe, we create. And I started creating from that mindset, a slightly different mindset. And as it began to, I got more and more confident and more aware of that program that keeps coming up. You're not good enough. Who do you think you are to be a coach? You know, who do you think you are? That imposter syndrome. Well, fuck me, excuse my language, I'm Malcolm, and you know. So I began to identify that inner critic that tells us, you know, keep you in your place and you're only good enough for that and blah, blah, blah. It's only a story. It's a story that we tell ourselves that at the end of the day, it's not true. So if we can create a different, better, more empowering story, we can create a life that serves us rather than does us disservice. And that's what I've done step by step, Jack. And it's still ongoing. And you can tell I'm pretty jazzed by it. I'm much happier than I used to be. And life works for me more.
And that's good. That's good. I think if we, you know, if we ever expect to want to move forward in our lives and not be stuck in that same rut over and over and over again, we need to switch to that change in mindset. You know, that's gone through pretty much everybody that I've ever interviewed have all gone through that, that switch in mindset, that want to be better, that want to not be that mess that they are, that not wanting to live in the mess that they created, wanting to be something different to what's expected. You know, and it is easy to feel like an imposter. It happens to me a lot, you know. I do this. I've been very blessed in, you know, what I've been able to do. Writing a couple of books and being involved in a couple of Hollywood films and, you know, doing a little bit of consulting. But still, that little niggling at the back of the head says, you know, are you good enough? Really, are you good enough?
Yeah. Because we've been programmed like that for so many years that we got that habit, it takes a while to make a new habit, right? So it takes that work to counteract that negative programming that's been there for so many years, in my case, decades.
In my case, decades. You know, I'm a bit older than I look. But, yeah, I mean, There's still that switch in there that tells you you're not good enough, and there's still the self-doubt and you know, do you still ever get that, you know, and how do you deal with that?
So, yes, I still get that, absolutely, but what has become easier for me now, Jack, is I'm more aware of that when it happens. Oh, there's that voice again. And I'm aware of it now when it happens. And when it happens, whether it's the lights, I just flip the switch and talk to myself in a way that's going to empower me to get what I want and not go back to my comfort zone where that inner critic wants you to be. You know, go back to your place. You know, you're operating at 80 degrees and you're normally your thermostat is at 68 degrees. So why are you here at 80 degrees or whatever? Get back, get in your place. So it's more like, screw that voice now. I'm using my inner rebel, F you kind of thing, as much as I can. Do I always do it? No. But yeah, it's still there. Of course,
Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of do that. I see it, I've said this a lot on the show, that I see it as like a mobile phone or a computer, and it comes brand spanking out the box, and it works how it's supposed to work, and then we add all these apps and these programs. And we do that with our life, we had things like education and spirituality and relationships and family and kids and all these things. And then, the surroundings that are around us, and then things start to go wrong. And I think we put up with it a bit too long, and we wait till we can't really put up with it anymore, and then we have to sort of reset back to factory resettings, reset back to default. We're supposed to have connection, we're supposed to have love, we're supposed to have the family, but these negative feelings, these trauma, drugs, drink, negative behavior, it's all a disconnection, it's all a disconnection from reality, from family, from relationship, from love. And that's not how we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be connected. But all these things are not everything works together. And then we end up undone, and we end up in breakdown mode, we end up in, not feeling good enough, not feeling right. And then we feel like we're back at step one. So we have to reset that. And to do that, it's no easy task to change your mindset. It's no easy task to push yourself forward into a new life. But how do we maintain it?
I think the real question here, what's coming up for me, is that because of all this programs and work on myself that I've done, it's first and foremost not about maintaining, it's how do we do that? How do we do it? So building the foundation of, because when we're born, all of us, we're not born screwed up or with a drug gene or a criminality gene. We get most, from my experience, over 95% of people in the criminal justice system have had, let's say, difficult childhoods, to say the very least. And to escape from the, so drugs, gambling, shopping, even whatever, our choice of addiction is, that's to escape the pain of feeling like shit, feeling unloved, feeling no connection. Because all children need three things. They need to feel loved. They need to be seen for who they are. Not that what their parents think, you should do that and be that. They need to be seen. just for who they are, and they need to feel they matter, that they matter. And guess what? So do adults. So do adults yes. want to be loved, seen, and feel they matter. And when you don't feel that, you're connecting with the pain that you've experienced in childhood. So we all have that little inner child within us. You know, I don't believe it's woo-woo. We all have that inner child within us that needed to be loved, needed to be seen for who they are. And even now. And when you can do the work on yourself, either with a therapist, a counselor, a coach, whatever means that you deem, you know, feels you resonate with, and listen until you have that foundation that you don't need fixing. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just that you learn these beliefs about you in childhood. You embrace them, thought they were true. But what we all know, what we can learn, we can unlearn. So it's creating that program, whether it's, you know, we have a virus. The virus is our mindset. But we can get rid of the virus, create a new program, put that in the operating system. And it's, I am lovable. I do matter. But you have to believe it first, because we all know the story of Robin Williams. Robin Williams had all the love in the world. Everyone loved Robin Williams. The only person who didn't love Robin Williams was him. And he hung himself. Whitney Houston, that's another one for the ladies, you know, the extreme, you know, she sang the greatest love of all, that song. But she didn't love herself. She couldn't. So if we have that foundation, yes, you know, I'm not perfect. No one's perfect, but I do feel that I have value. Right? So I deserve to be, I treat others with dignity and respect. So I deserve that too. I deserve dignity and respect, right? And if you believe that, really believe that, you don't take shit from anyone, right? You don't, it's not about, least of all, you don't take shit from yourself when that voice comes in and says you're not good enough. So it's about reframing how we see ourselves. And then, how do you continue that? Well, you keep shining the light on it, being aware of it. It tries to sneak in the back door. You know, you're aware when it's, and you know what it feels like to not value yourself, and live with that program, you become gradually, bit by bit, keep doing it, make that a habit, continuous habit, and it will get easier. And then when you value yourself, you come from a different place. You know, when I say it's not about people disrespecting you or giving you shit or whatever, and then beating them up, it's just, I don't want to be in your energy. Goodbye. Whether that's a partner, a friend, I don't want to, you know, see you, you know, whatever. Have people around you. And when you have that different frame that I value myself, we want to play along with people, be in the energy of people just like that, who don't criticize you. Or don't say, well, why do you want to do that? You know, that negativity mindset, you want to be with people that raise you up, raise your game. And they value you value them. So, yeah, but it can be done. I've done it, and I'm just an average guy. I'm just an average guy. It was hard, but was it worth it? Oh, my God, yeah. It's so much worth it. And now I don't have to constantly be aware of it. I have to, what's the word, maintain, use maintenance, like on the car. I just have to maintain this, be aware of it, and then when it tries to sneak in through the back door, whatever, I can get back on track to where I am much easier than I could. Does that make sense, Joe?
It does. It does. I think that, you know, you can have all the will and intention in the world, and you can have all the want to change, and you push yourself to do that, but there are times when actually you don't feel strong enough, and it doesn't feel easy, and it doesn't feel right. And we have to look at that. We have to look at that as survivors, as people, as parents. You know, it's, we have to be, I guess what I'm trying to say is, we don't always feel strong, but we're actually more resilient and stronger than we think. And I think that that's a trap that we fall into, because I think that purely by admitting that we were weak and powerless makes us strong. You said at the start of the interview about these toxic ways that people see men, you know. And that's one thing that I want to do with my, you know, my podcasts and my ministries and stuff, is that I want to show that men can stand out from the norm. You know, men can show their feelings. Men can cry. Men can be vulnerable. You know, I've been at pretty much every extreme of mental health. I've lost people to suicide. I've almost lost myself several times to suicide. And it's, a lot of it is because people don't understand that. I had a problem with a guy not so long ago, on Messenger, and, you know, I'm very honest about my mental health, and I'm very honest about my past, and I'm very, you know, I wasn't an honest guy, so I believe that in my recovery and in my, you know, in my life, I need to be open and honest, and, you know, so I'm honest about how I was, and, you know, how it led me to suicide and things like that, and he called me selfish. And it's not. He called me weak. And I'm not. Well, I am, but I'm not. And that can really, that mentality on other people, especially other men, can drag people with divergent brains like myself, like yourself, you know, like a lot of people that are watching now that think differently and feel differently. It can drag us down a really, really difficult path. It's not weak to admit that you're vulnerable, and it's not weak to admit that you can't cope, and it's not weak to admit that you're sad. It's not weak to admit that you're suicidal. It's not weak. And it's certainly not selfish. What it is, is the lack of education on other people, which is the reason that I do this, and it's the reason why I get guys like you to come on and share your stories, you know, and share your wisdom, because I believe in the power of healing through combined wisdom. you know, because we haven't all got the answers, but if we put them together, we might find a few solutions. You know, so what would you say to, you know, anybody watching that might be going through a difficult time within themselves and they don't know how to switch that mindset, they don't know how to make that first step, what would you say to them?
I guess it partly depends on where they are in the journey. And the deciding factor for me, when I'm considering working with a client, I'm thinking, are they committed to change? Do they really want what they want badly enough? And where are they on their journey? And not everyone's in the same place. So I was very interested, Jack, in what you shared with me about this guy on Messenger, who that anyone could get something like that, negative feedback, whether that's on Messenger or just face to face or wherever, and it could derail them. Now, that the evidence for me there is, if you're derailed by that, in other words, you believe what they say over your truth, then there's a lot of work to be done on your self-worth, what you value. Because from what I know now, they're the one with the problem, not you. They have the problem. Who do they think they are saying, using words like selfish and weak, or whatever else, however they wrap that up, to me that smacks of they have the problem and you don't. When you heard that, when you saw that message, what reaction did you have to that? I'm interested in that.
What reaction did I have to that? Well, I kind of laughed, to be honest. I guess kind of out of disbelief that a man in this day and age who, you know, would be bold enough to call themselves emotionally, spiritually stable, who, you know, declare themselves to have conviction in what they say, and, you know, them saying that and then me pulling them up on that and then them going, oh, well, yeah, you know, I'm backing down. To me, it was not me that was, you know, that was weak. It was them that was showing the weakness. If they were to come to me and say, look, this is how I'm feeling, then I could sit with them and I could speak with them. Or if they said, look, I'm sorry for what I've just said, I said it because this is what I believe, because because forgive me if I go off on a little bit of a tangent here, but you know, I've got some bugbears that are going on at the minute in you know, the way that people think that there's a lot of people trying to cancel people at the minute.
Yeah.
You know, especially podcasters. You know, there's a whole Joe Rogan thing and, you know, and I don't believe in censorship in any form, because I believe that if we are to have the freedom of speech, we cannot take away somebody's freedom of speech to reinforce our freedom of speech. Whether yeah. they're right or wrong in what they're saying, whether it's sexist, whether it's racist, whether it's bigoted, whatever, you know, it's their right to believe, their right to think, their right to say, my right to reply.
Right.
That's the way that it works. You cannot silence somebody by shouting louder.
Yeah.
And the thing that is bugging me at the minute is that everybody's trying to cancel everybody for saying, you know, things about gender and race, and, you know, it's their right to feel it, it's their right to think it, it's their right to say it, and it's our right to reply. And there's, you know, there are still people out there that will go, oh, well, you know, you're selfish and you're whingy and you're whiny and you're living your own drama and you do this and you do that. You know, I've pretty much heard everything that you can hear from somebody toxically. And I don't believe it. But I think it would be awfully irresponsible to say that it doesn't affect, because it does. I'll let it, I'll let most of it ride over my head, but there are days when you just really don't want to do it, and you just want to rah at somebody, and that's my right, that's their right to say it, it's my right to rah back. You know, if somebody stands in front of me and calls me a prick, it's my right to argue that or poke them in the eye. You know, it's how we deal with it, but not everybody is able to deal with that, or not everybody is at the point where they can deal with it. You know, there are a lot of people that listen to my work and watch my work and listen to what people say, and they sit back and they listen, and a lot of them are in recovery, and a lot of them are you know being in different parts and themselves, and not everybody that follows that have been able to find the strength to open their mouths and be honest. But not everybody can deal with that honesty as well. Or not everybody can deal with somebody saying something negative, because negative affects. You know, some people can deal with it on one day and they can't with another. It's just the way that it is. It is the way that it is, and it's the way that we are. As a human race, I suppose. What I want to do is I want to teach people ways, different ways. Now, I'm not saying there's one way, because there isn't. There's always more than one way. You know, for me, my faith means a great deal to me. I'm a man of faith. And that is a big part of my journey. For other people, that, you know, it might be just doing something, or watching films, or reading books, or education, or, you know, it could be anything. It could be anything. You know, I know there are people watching tonight that might not understand everything that we're saying, and they might not be in a place to want to understand what we're saying. So what I want to do is I want to give snippets of information that people can pick and listen to and digest in an easy way. You know, so let's say there's somebody listening, and, you know, they want to find something with you or with me to identify with. What, you know, that they want that connection. how would you build that connection? How can you build that connection? How can we build that connection with other people like yourself?
When you say, how can you build that connection with other people, can you clarify what you mean by that, Jack, so I can address it?
Well, like people like yourself, you know, with a little bit of the knowledge, how, you know, as we know, disconnection is a real thing that our society is. You know, we're disconnected from a lot of things, and especially with this pandemic and, you know, Zoom, like we're on now, this caused a reconnection with people. It's why I started. But, you know, there are so many people that are feeling disconnected to life, disconnected to people, and you've said some real things that you know, a lot of people can take hold of, but some people in a certain state of mind can only digest a small amount of knowledge to be able to, you know, connect with someone. If you are wanting to connect with someone on, you know, this, like we're connecting together, where, you know, we're having a rapport, we're speaking, we're building a relationship, you know, how would you speak to those that are watching that you can't see, that can only digest little chunks? What little chunk would you give, I guess, to these people to take away to think about?
Yeah, got it, Jack. So the people who are listening to this podcast right now, they are already aware at some level that something in their life isn't working for them or serving them right now. They want something more. They want something better. So they have that awareness. They're not here by accident, right? This isn't an accident. They're still here. Maybe they're still listening after 1 hour. So that's the first thing. So we need to do this, you know, it's like that saying, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So the first little bite is you're already aware something's not working. You're already interested. So what's the next little bite? What's the next little chunk? It would be whatever it was, where we're all at different places on the journey. Some are further along than others. That's okay. But what is it for you? What little bite is it? Is it looking at psychology or personal growth, self-development books and just browsing through and just pick one that you think that's interesting, buy it and read it. Or for someone else, it might be, I want a counsellor. I'm going to hire a counsellor or a therapist or a coach or whatever. But then someone else, it might just be, oh, that's interesting, this podcast. Maybe I'll be thinking, what am I saying to myself mostly during the day? Am I saying to myself how I suck, how I'm not good enough most of the day? Am I talking to myself like, am I talking shit? Am I talking trash to me? If I'm talking trash, talking me, why am I putting up with it? I wouldn't put up with that from my wife or my friend or my husband or whatever. So why am I talking trash to me? So whatever it is, just that little bite that you think, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to, so whether it's a book, a counselor, a coach, a therapist, just take a next step. Just do one thing, not lots of things. Because then we get confused. Like when we got so many choices, you don't know what to pick. But just pick one thing right now and do it. Get that book. Hire that coach. look at the mindset. What are you thinking all the time? You know, people know when they're trash talking to themselves. I know, even now, I knew back then when I was doing so much trash talking. So that's what I'd say, Jack. Basically, keep it simple. You can make this as simple or as complex as you want. And I've always found that keep it simple works. You know, it's not rocket science. There's something that encapsulates this kind of mindset. I'm going to teach you something amazing, audience. If you're do things that you're good at, that you're successful at, do more of those. And the things you don't like and you're not successful at, do less of those. Now that's not rocket science, right? It's so obvious. Do more that works, do less of what doesn't. But it's as simple as that. And you deserve it. So there's a book called The Six Pillars of Self-Confidence, I think it's that, by Dr. Nathaniel Brandon. And he believes there are two things that you must have to be confident. The two things are, the first thing is, I believe I can handle anything that life throws at me. I got quite good at that. But the second one, I wasn't so good at. I'm better now. I believe in my core of who I am. I deserve happiness and success. I deserve it just because I'm on this planet. So when we have that belief, just do whatever resonates with each one of you, that you can do this. It is possible. I've done it, Jack's done it, and many, many other people have done it. And they've all come from, you know, Oprah Winfrey. I mean, if you look at her life and, you know, a woman of color growing up in where they still hung colored people from the tree. And she was, you know, sexually abused, blah, blah, blah. But are you hungry for this? Do you want it? Are you really hungry? That this isn't working. This has got to change. And if you're hungry, you'll do it. Because I know that if my desire is higher than my fear of whatever it is, and we all have fears, right? But if my desire for what I want to achieve is higher than the fear, I'll push through anything. Screw this, I'm going for it. And when I want something badly enough, I'll do whatever it takes to get it. Like when I was learning to walk again, get my life back, that was a desire that was unshakable. And I did it because of that mindset. I wanted it bad. I really wanted it bad. So all these little tricks, whatever it takes to trick your mind to say, screw this, I'm going for it. Could even be an inspirational piece of music, you know, a rock song, anything. Just something that touches you in at the core and gets you to take that action, take that first bite out of the elephant or that first bite out of whatever it is. But you're doing this for you. At the end of the day, this is not about someone else. This is about you. Yay, being selfish, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. When you learn to be selfish and care for you, then you can give that gift to others. You can't love others or do anything more than you love yourself. It's impossible. So do it. Take that first bite. Just, you know, it's a simple, like the Nike advert, just do it. Simple to say, not easy to do. If you're hungry, if you're starving for something to change, you will do it. You've got to be hungry. That's not my saying, that someone else has done.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you have got to want it. You don't always feel it, but you have got to want it. And I think that's how we, you know, this too shall pass is a good one for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when things are going wrong, this too shall pass. Sometimes when things are going right, we know this too shall pass as well. Sorry, you're breaking up a bit, mate. Can you say that again?
Yeah, this one you say is a big one. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Can you hear me, Jack? Yeah, so for you, faith is a big one. And I'm not religious, I'm more spiritual. I didn't used to be, but for me, faith is in the unseen, right? Faith in the belief that you can change this. And yes, we do have our bad days. We all have bad days. And then that's more difficult to, you know, do this work. But we don't always have bad days. And when you have that belief in yourself that is serving you, you have less bad days and more good days. So as long as we all know that from where the journey from where we are now to where we want to go isn't a straight line up. We have, you know, like any graph, you have that, like the stock market has its dips and it goes up, it goes down. But as long as the line is basically going forward to your compelling future, whatever that is you want, whether it's a better relationship with your wife or your kids or better job or better health, as long as that line is going up, that's the main thing, right? It's a journey. Good days, bad days, but yeah. I want to say, keep the faith, brother. You know, it's keeping that overall faith that life is happening for you and it's not to you. It's not screwing you. Life is happening for you. Even the bad times are good, right? When I look back on my, and people have said this, not just me, but I look back on that nightmare experience of the brain tumor, that did give, a gift came out of that. A gift did come out of that. Does everyone have to have a brain tumor or whatever? No, of course not. But that was the wake-up call. My marriage was the first, end of marriage was the first wake-up call. And then I got hit with a really hard lesson and it made me reevaluate things. And now that's the gift that keeps on giving. But do people have to go through that? No, and I wouldn't wish that on anyone. So yeah, but keep the faith. I think that's in the belief. Whatever you believe in, whatever your religion is, just keep the faith in you because you deserve it.
Yeah. I would agree with that. So how can my viewers connect with you, with your work? Do you have any work that, is there a book in the pipeline?
Right now I'm haven't got the website up still. Tech's not, I've struggled with that. But I'm on Facebook, I have a business Facebook, LinkedIn, email. You can reach out to me in any of those ways. I'm happy to help as much as I can. If anyone wants to have a chat, a discovery call, where can, what can they do next? I'm happy to offer that for free. No charge, 45 minutes, 60 minutes, just have a chat and see what the next step is for them. And I'm happy to do that. It's all about serving others because that, at the end of the day, that's my mission now, to make impact in a positive way in people's lives and also to serve me, getting paid for it so I can do, I have to pay, keep the lights on and the bills paid, and it's about service. And I love what I do, helping people guiding people, walking side by side with them as a life coach. It's from the crossing the bridge from where they are now. I walk side by side with them across that bridge and help them to go and create what they imagine or what they would like, make that become real for them. And I love that work. It gets me out of bed every day. It's so worthwhile. I'm so, happy that I came, this journey. I love my life, and it's like, even though nothing's perfect, right? But it's so much better than it was. And I want that for everyone. I want that for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we all want that for everyone. I think we all want the best life that anyone can. I can hear you, yeah. I was just saying that I agree with everything that you're saying. We want the best for everyone. We all need to live our best life. And how we do it is up to us. It's up to them. Whatever makes you happy. I want to start rounding it up, but is there anything that you would like to say to my listeners out there before we wrap up?
Basically, just what I've said, that there's nothing wrong with you. You're not broken. There's not, you don't need fixing. You just need to reconnect with who you were before you got screwed up by life, whatever that was for you, whether it's your parents or, they did the best they could. They probably had a difficult life themselves. So I think we're breaking up, are we, Jack?
I can still hear you.
So give yourself the gift of belief in the possibility. When we're children, we're great at imagining. When we get adults, we put away, that believing something that there is a possibility, there's options, and you can imagine. If you can imagine that you deserve more and you're going to have more and it's going to be okay, it is possible. It's possible. So those two words, it's possible. I'll leave you with that, because it is. I know it is. And I know you know it is, Jack. It's possible.
Yeah. Yeah, it is very much. You just got to, it's a lot of work. It's not always easy, but, if you want to make a step, and if you're watching tonight and you want to make a step, please do reach out to me. Feel free to reach out to Malcolm. I will put, when I edit the description and stuff, I will put my website on there. I will put Malcolm's contact details on there for anybody that may want them. If you just stay on the line for a few minutes, Malcolm, I'll just wrap up and then we'll have a quick chat after I finish the broadcast.
Sure.
Thanks, guys, as always, for tuning in and listening. As you do every time, I always say I have the best followers and fans, and I'm very, very blessed. The next broadcast, I believe, maybe Saturday. As always, don't quote me on that, but I'm working with getting someone on to speak about the damage of unforgiveness and how forgiveness can heal. That's something that I want everybody to hear, because it's such a prevalent force in my life, and it's one of the only reasons I've been able to get sober and stay sober is through forgiveness. So yeah, thanks guys, as always, and I shall see you next time. Cheers, guys.